It's the roar of the presses. Working day and night in the north, south, east, and west of our nation, these daily presses pour out over 48 million newspapers. And behind these millions of headlines are the country's ace reporters, men and women who bring you the inside story. Tonight, the makers of Maxwell House Coffee bring you America's Press Conference of the Air, Meet the Press, where you'll meet top newsmen in an unrehearsed, spontaneous press conference with one of the outstanding personalities in today's news, Governor Alfred E. Driscoll. Ready for the conference are four of America's top newsmen who are here to ask the questions you would ask Governor Driscoll. Now, meet Mr. Lawrence Spivak. Mr. Spivak is the editor of the American Mercury magazine. And here is Ms. Inez Robb, distinguished reporter with the International News Service. Noted among the press is Mr. W.W. Chaplin, well-known commentator and newsman of the National Broadcasting Company. Another important newsman here tonight is Murray Davis of the New York World Telegram. And here with us is radio's Miss Martha Roundtree, producer of Meet the Press. And here being introduced to the ladies and gentlemen of the press is the governor of New Jersey, the Honorable Alfred E. Driscoll. Governor Driscoll is one of the up-and-coming young Republicans who will have an important place in any new leadership of the GOP. And now, Miss Roundtree.
And now, who has the first question? Just for spite, I won't start with Mr. Spivak. Miss Robb.
Just for spite, then, I'll ask Governor Driscoll if he isn't glad he wasn't named vice president down in on the Republican ticket in Philadelphia in June.
Well, I was glad then, and I'm very glad now. It's an easy one.
Go ahead, Miss Robb.
I'd like to ask him another question. Are you a young Republican?
Well, I'm a younger Republican. That's a matter of definition, I think.
Yes, you're the only young Republican I've ever seen under 50 who had his own hair.
Thank you. I assure you, it's my hair, and my wife says I need a haircut, so...
Mr. Spivak, now.
Governor, how do you explain the Republican defeat? Everybody else has explained it, and I suppose you ought to, too.
Well, I suppose that too many people have already tried to explain it. In my judgment, it was due in part to overconfidence, in part to a lack of real fight, due perhaps to that overconfidence, and in part to the fact that the Republican Party, as a party, has on a number of instances gotten pretty far away from the people.
Exactly what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean by that, there are a lot of folks who thought that we had to be pushed into a support of aid for Europe, for example. Now, you and I know that that isn't so. That a number of Republican leaders, including Governor Dewey, were in the forefront of a fight for foreign aid to our former friends and present friends in Europe. But some folks thought that we were being pushed rather than leading.
Well, do you think you could have won with somebody else? Do you think it was the head of the ticket who lost the fight for you?
No,
do you
I
think
don't.
You could have won with Stassen? Do you think you could have won with Taft?
I think we lost in an atmosphere that was conducive to losing. And I don't think that it would have made a great deal of difference who the head of our ticket was. I think it would have been more difficult with Taft than it was with Governor Dewey.
Mr. Davis.
Governor, do you think the Republican Party, as it's now constituted, is through nationally?
No, I do not.
Why don't you think it is? They certainly got a licking here four times. How many times? Five times in a row, actually.
Well, Navy lost seven games in a row and came back to do a pretty good job. Of course, we've got to do more than tie.
Well, what do you think of Bud Kellen's criticism of the Republican Party as it's now set up?
Well, I'm not too familiar with his point of view, although I think that the Republican Party may justifiably be criticized for some of its attitudes in the past.
Mr. Chaplin.
I think that Inez Robb and Governor Driscoll collaborated a moment ago in a bit of wisdom, which I would like a little bit more about. Inez asked you, Governor, about the young Republicans, and you said that's a matter of definition. She, at the same time, said something about you're the first one she'd seen with his own hair. if that's a matter of definition, as I entirely agree with you, could we have the definition? The trouble, what has bedeviled every youth movement in history that I know of, is the unfortunate habit that people have of growing older. And the first thing you know, you can't have a rising vote anymore in a youth movement because nobody can get out of their wheelchairs. Now, what do you mean when you say young Republicans, and why should we think that they'll do better for us than the old Republicans, some of whom are pretty young?
It's a long question.
That's quite a long question. I don't want to confine the future of the Republican Party to young Republicans in the sense of age. I would try to define young Republican as having a younger point of view, a forward-looking point of view, rather than a backward-looking point of view. And certainly I would include in that point of view an international point of view, a willingness to consider social programs domestically.
Go ahead, Mr. Davis.
Along that line, you talked about foreign aid a minute ago. Madam Chiang Kai-shek is on her way over to this country. What do you think of China, help to China?
Well, I'm very much in favor of aid to China.
Why?
It seems to me a country that was willing to give unlimited aid to Russia, for example, with full knowledge it's the kind of government that Russia has, and did so because it wanted to win the war, ought now to be willing to help China so that in the long run we can win the peace.
Well, we've given them billions. Are we going to give them more billions? Is that the idea?
Well, winning the peace doesn't seem to me to be a job that can be limited to months or years. It seems to me it's a duration job.
Well, how much can we stand in billions? I mean, giving it away.
Well, did we ask that question when we were fighting the war?
Well, I ask it now. We're not fighting a war.
I think we're still trying to win the peace for which the war was fought. And while I recognize, of course, that there is a limit to the amount of money that America can expend even in so important a program, nonetheless, I don't think we've reached that limit yet.
Mr. Spivak.
Fortunately, I have before me Governor Clarence Budington Kellan's quotation on the campaign. Mr. Davis, a moment ago, asked you about it, and I'd like to read it to you and see whether you agree or disagree with what he said. He said, Dewey's campaign was smug, arrogant, stupid, and supercilious. No issues were stated or faced. Do you think that was true of the Republican campaign, that they failed to state their issues or face them?
Well, I would like to enter an emphatic denial on the first part of that statement. I think that the Republican Party did fail for reasons that are now apparent, which were perhaps not apparent at that time, to adequately state and fight the issues.
Now, Governor, the future of the Republican Party is going to be determined, by who wins the fight, whether the conservatives or the liberals. Now, how do you yourself feel about it? Do you think that the Republican Party ought to become the conservative party of America or ought to become the liberal party of America?
Well, I certainly don't think that the Republican Party ought to be a party of reaction. Some folks insist on defining conservatism as reactionism. I think that the Republican Party ought to be a progressive party, a party that does have a liberal point of view, however the word liberal has been used and abused. Well, I'm not sure I know what it means.
Would you say that Senator Taft represents that kind of liberalism?
No, I would not.
Would you say he represents the kind of conservatism that the Republican Party must ditch?
Well, I think that Senator Taft, in some aspects of his program, is quite conservative. On the other hand, when it comes to his programs for federal aid to the states, I think he's very liberal, if not rather radical in his thinking.
Miss Robb.
I think you're right there, but he is certainly extremely conservative, let us say, in the things that we need now, such as universal military training, is he not?
I think so, yes. I would incline to define him there as a conservative.
And wouldn't you define him as a conservative when it comes to sending aid not only to Europe, but the aid that you envision for China?
I think so, yes.
Mr. Spivak?
Well, we're calling for a new leadership in the Republican Party. Now, who is to be that leadership? Is it to be Saltonstall? Is it to be Taft? Is it to be Baldwin? Is it to be Halleck? Is it to be Martin? or is it to be a conglomeration of all of them? I mean, what's your judgment on that? Who is to represent the young leadership of the Republican Party?
Well, it's my hope that the Republican Party, in the immediate future, will call a series of conferences, and that this new leadership will be developed in the course of the debates that we Republicans should pursue in an effort to consolidate our position and determine upon policy.
Now, if you enter those debates, as I'm sure you're going to, what suggestions are you going to make? Who do you think ought to represent some of that leadership?
Well, I don't think we ought to think in terms of personalities at the moment. I think we have to debate the basic principles that are involved. And in the course of that debate, I think this new leadership will develop.
What about the basic principles? And let's debate those issues at the moment. Where do you think the Republican Party ought to stand on those basic principles?
Well,
do you think they ought to emulate the New Deal?
No, I don't think that the Republican Party ought to be another Me Too party. I don't think that we ought to rely on our capacity to do a job better than someone else is doing it. I think that we ought to come forth with some very definite principles and fight for those principles.
Mr. Davis.
Governor, do you consider Governor Dewey as the head of the Republican Party?
I consider Governor Dewey as one of the leaders of the Republican Party.
Well, who is the head of the Republican Party now?
I think the tradition has always included a recognition of the candidate for the presidency as the nominal leader of the Republican Party. But my point is that we're going to develop this new leadership, I hope, in the course of the discussions of basic principles in the next year.
I see Mr. Davis still has his hand up, Governor.
I want to go back to Mr. Spivak's question about your feeling toward Senator Taft, and he put some tests up on that. Do you feel that Governor Dewey is about the same stripe of politician and Republican leader as Secretary or Senator Taft?
No, I think there are differences between Governor Dewey and Senator Taft that are rather fundamental. I would say that the first difference that I believe exists is that their reaction to the requests for foreign assistance. I would think that there was a substantial difference in their point of view with respect to China, for example. On this whole problem of international affairs, I think there are substantial differences between Senator Taft and Governor Dewey.
Well, which one do you place higher in the leadership of the governor of the GOP, the governor or the senator?
Well, I think that Governor Dewey, by virtue of his nomination, is certainly, until some action is taken by the Republican Party, in a traditionally position of preferment.
Well, it's inherited, that's all.
That's right, that's all. But again, I'd like to say that I think this leadership of our new party must be won, not inherited.
Then you don't consider Governor Dewey the leader of the party, actually?
I think the leadership of the Republican Party ought to be developed in the course of debating the great issues that confront our party and our nation.
Mr. Chapman.
Following up what Murray just said, Governor, you say Mr. Dewey remains the titular head of the party until some action is taken. What action can be taken? What can the party do, the young Republicans?
You mean the Republicans with a young point of view?
With a young point of view, if it's desired to change leadership.
Well, I think that we ought to hold a series of meetings, and we ought to decide what kind of a party we want to present to the American people. Now, if I were asked to attend those meetings, first and foremost, I would like to debate the issue of foreign affairs. Where do we stand on that issue? Are we as a party in agreement that we must carry through with the Marshall Plan, so-called, that it is vitally important to save China before it's engulfed in a wave of communism? I think that there would be room for differences of opinion on that. But out of the debate, the give and take of debate, we ought to decide once and for all where the party stands on that program. Then I'd like to see us debate the great questions of federalism. Do we believe in a federal system or a centralized form of government? I would take the position that the Republican Party should support a federal form of government where the states would be
coordinate members of this republic of ours and become the great administrative agencies for the social programs that we're now pushing.
Miss Robb, Governor Driscoll, for the last 20 years, it has seemed to me that the Republican Party, certainly has been licked five times in the national election, has been strangled by the dead hand of reaction. How are you going to rid yourself of that dead hand? I don't want to embarrass you by naming the boys I think with the dead hands, but I think you know who they are. How are you going to get rid of them? They still are great powers in the Republican Party.
That's right. I think we're going to have to remove the dead hands from the shoulders of the Republican parties by these open debates in which we'll go to the people and ask for a vote of confidence for our particular point of view.
Go ahead, Ms. Robb. About 10 days ago, Philip Wilkie, in an address to the alleged young Republicans in New York, suggested such a series of conferences. He suggested particularly an annual conference based on such conferences that each of the big political parties have in England, in which policies are discussed, new leadership arises, and so on. Is that your idea?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we might very well take a page out of the record of the Labour Party in England, which has, I think, by far the best conference.
May I say one other thing? I think you take a page out of the Labour Party in England, you'll get rid of that dead hand. It'll drop dead.
I'm not suggesting we should adopt Labour policies in England, but that we might adopt their procedures.
Speaking of cleaning up parties and changing and going over to states, there's a machine in Jersey City called the Hague Machine. As governor, what has been done to straighten that out?
Well, we started by defeating the Hague Machine 2 years ago, and we hope to continue to do that.
Mr. Davis.
Along that same line, what do you think of the investigation of your own GOP representative over in Jersey, Parnell Thomas?
I think that investigation was in order, and that we ought to find the facts and let the chips fall. And I think the Republicans ought to support a fact-finding, chip-falling program.
Mr. Chapman.
While we're in your state for the moment, Governor, would you tell us something about that bridge deal over there, which has created a lot of furor in the papers? A bridge was sold.
A bridge was sold.
And somebody made a lot of money.
That's right, and Republicans are engaged in finding the facts and in chopping the wood.
Mr. Spivak.
Governor, I hate to press you on this, but I think it's fairly important. I think one of the troubles of the last campaign, that too many politicians were too political. Now, there's going to be a fight in the Republican Party, without any question. I understand that they're trying to get rid of Senator Taft as head of the policy committee. There are others who want to get rid of Halleck and others who want to get rid of Martin. Now, I'd like to ask you, if you walked into an annual conference or any other conference, where would you stand on those issues? Whom do you want to represent you? Do you want Senator Taft and Mr. Halleck and Mr. Martin and Senator Wherry to represent you? I'm not saying this critically. I just would like to know where you stand.
No, I would prefer not to have them represent me, because while I respect them as individuals, Senator Taft particularly, for whom I have a very high regard, I don't think he and I are in agreement on either domestic or foreign policies.
Now, who would you like to represent you? I mean, what members of the Senate, for example, represent your point of view? Is it Saltonstall? Is it Baldwin? Is it Ives?
Well, I might
come. Is it Morse?
I might come back and talk about New Jersey and say, on foreign affairs, Senator H. Alexander Smith of New Jersey. I might suggest that Senator Baldwin, for example, possibly, and Senator Saltonstall. There are others that should be named in that group, but I think you know the grouping as well as I do.
Mr. Chapman.
Could we add to that list, Governor, the name of Mr. Driscoll?
Well, I'm a governor, and I'm busy being a governor, but I would certainly like to participate in the debates.
Mr. Davis.
What are your future plans politically? Now, you can only run for one term over there, isn't that right?
No, the new Constitution permits a governor to succeed himself for one term.
Does that apply to your term?
That applies to my term. However, I've successfully ducked all questions on that point in our local press conference.
Well, this is not a local press conference. How about it? What are you going to do tonight?
What am I going to do?
How are you?
I'm going to finish my term tonight.
Don't hold out on us now.
No, I won't hold out on you.
What's your future plan? Come on.
That decision remains to be made.
Ms. Rye. I want to press that, too. There's talk about the Senate in 1950. Governor Driscoll?
We have two fine senators in Senator H. Alexander Smith and Senator-elect Hendrickson.
Well, I'd just like to ask one other question. Then, are you a presidential possibility in 52? I like to know these things in advance so I can be prepared.
I do not regard myself as a possible candidate anywhere along the line as of tonight.
Well, you were a favorite son for the vice presidency in 48. It seems natural they'd promote you in 52.
Oh, there's a great deal of work to be done between now and 52, and we better agree upon principles before we begin to think in terms of personalities.
Well, you seem to have some.
Oh, I hope I have. I know I have some convictions, and I'd like to fight for them.
Mr. Spivak.
Governor, while we're on the matter of principles, what about the Hague machine? Why has he been kept in power so long in New Jersey? Who's been responsible for that?
I think Republicans have been, in large measure, responsible for keeping Mayor Hague in power. Republicans, a good many years ago, took first the attitude that why help Jersey City? Because when you help Jersey City and the citizens of Jersey City, you simply helped Mayor Hague. As a result, the citizens of Jersey City had nowhere else to go but to the Hague machine. We try to correct that situation by having a constructive program of assistance for the citizens of Jersey City in common with all of our large cities.
Well, do you think you've broken his power now? Do you think Hague is finished in New Jersey?
Well, I think the best evidence of Mr. Hague's power is the fact that New Jersey was the banner Republican state in the last election.
Miss Robb.
Gunnar Driscoll, I think these people are letting you off easy. They keep mentioning Hague. They don't seem to know about that tight little Republican machine down in Burlington and Atlantic and Camden County and that $12 million bridge deal.
Well, suffice it to say that Republicans were defeated in Burlington County in the last election. And perhaps they were defeated because no effort was made to withhold information which was vitally important to the public.
I just want to ask one question. Did they unload that $12 million bridge before the election?
Yes.
Mr. Davis, now.
Didn't one of your Republican friends make $300,000 out of a $50,000 investment on that bridge deal?
Well,
Or did he? Or do you know?
No, it is admitted that a very substantial amount of money was made. I was hesitating over the definition of the word friend.
All right. There was some money, a lot of money made on that deal, wasn't it? The bridge is worth about, appraised at $4,700,000, sold at $3,000,000, the two bridges. Is that right?
Well, there's federal and state legislation which authorized the state of New Jersey or any of its political subdivisions to acquire the bridges, according to our interpretation of the legislation, for $4,900,000.
Hmm.
And the bridges were sold to the county of Burlington for $12 million.
But they reduced the toll after they bought it for this excessive amount, according to your figures.
That's right.
Well, how do you explain that?
Well, I assume that the reduction in the toll was to put the sugar on the pill. And in due course, the financial aspects of this whole transaction will become, I think, transparent. Public will have an opportunity to judge whether they wanted an immediate reduction in toll and an additional indebtedness of some $6 million.
Now, let's give Mr. Chaplin a chance again.
Governor, we talked a little bit on this program about the liberalism or conservatism of the youthful-minded Republicans. Do you consider that the Taft-Hartley bill stands for what the young Republicans stand for?
In its present form?
In its present form.
No. No, I don't. Now, that is due in part, I think, to a lack of understanding of the Taft-Hartley bill. I think that if the Taft-Hartley bill were fully understood, that there are many so-called liberal-minded people who would support major features of the bill, although asking for some modification.
Well, Governor, do you favor the repeal of the act?
I favor the modification of the act.
But do you think it ought to be repealed and then repassed, or do you think it ought to be modified and kept, for the most part, intact?
Oh, I think that's a matter of mechanics. I think the question is one of objectives. You can completely repeal a bill while going through the mechanics of modifying it. I would retain certain features of the Taft-Hartley bill, and I think labor generally would retain many features of the Taft-Hartley bill.
Whether you repeal it and start over again or whether you modify it, I think it's just a matter of mechanics.
Miss Robb, now.
Where would you make your modifications, Governor?
Well, one with respect to the clothes shop.
You would legalize a clothes shop?
Oh, yes. I permit both management and labor to agree upon a clothes shop, if that seemed desirable.
Would you ask management also to take a non-communist oath as well as a...
Oh, yes. I think that that's important only from appearance sake, but I think it is important.
Yes,
that...
I do, too.
Would you...
Excuse me.
Go ahead,
Miss Robb, go ahead. No, I was interested in one section of that bill which requires the labor unions to make a statement of the finances. Would you retain that in the modified bill?
Well, I'm not trying to duck that one.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I really do have to interrupt. Thank you, Governor Driscoll, for your willingness to meet the press. I'm sorry we couldn't give you a chance to answer that.
Next week's guest will be another front page figure in the news. Now this is Ken Roberts saying goodnight for Miss Inez Robb, Mr. Lawrence Spivak, Mr. Murray Davis, Mr. W.W. Chaplin, Miss Martha Roundtree, and Governor Driscoll. Meet the Press is presented to you each week by Maxwell House Coffee. Be sure to look in next week, same time, same station, for Meet the Press, brought to you by the makers of Maxwell House Coffee, the coffee that's always good to the last drop.